All right, everybody, welcome. Wednesday night is upon us. It's Vibrant time. Good to see everyone in the chat. I think I'll just start by saying thanks to Stacy, who's a new member to the subscription thing that YouTube offers, and that's pretty exciting. Anybody that's a paid subscriber either through here or Patreon, wanted to give you the heads up. Oh, and here's the man himself, Dylan. Dylan and I recorded the second episode of the Inner World members only exclusive podcast today, coming out sometime this week on my side anyway. And it was awesome. All about everything that we could dig up about the Pelagi, the holy sailors who gave the Greeks and the Irish their letters. Really fun podcast, super dense with information and even some on the fly discoveries. Also want to say hi to Priscilla. Thank you for being here. Bright eyed, bushy tailed every Wednesday. Love you. Third Eye Edify. Love you, buddy. Kabir, Skywalk, Treese, I Am, and the wifey, Jenny G. Good to see everybody. Really excited about tonight because our guest, Isaac, he's somebody that I've been in touch with for probably like a year. And I've always been impressed by his enthusiasm. And I know that he has a message to share about his journey to what he's doing now. And, you know, it's never bad to talk about Orgonite because it's art that's functional. So I love the creativity that goes into this stuff and the potentials that it has to balance our energetic environment. I love all that. So welcome everybody to the show. Gabe, how you doing, buddy? My inflection didn't sound like I was done talking, but how you doing, Gabe? Good to see you, man. Are we in good sync? Okay. Maybe a little delay for Gabe. He'll catch up. Isaac, welcome to Vibrant, man. It's good to have you on.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me on. I can't wait.
A moment.
we'll cut Gabe in after he catches up.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a pleasure to be here. My name is Isaac Lazell. Thank you. It's a pleasure to meet you, too. You guys are so amazing. I've been a huge fan of the show for a long time. You guys have taught me so much, and I can't wait to chat about Orgonite and everything that we will chat about. So.
Me too, man. Yeah. Gabe's delay is sometimes a little tricky, but we just play a dancing game where we wave. So I'm going to, in about 10 seconds, I'm going to stop talking and pass it over to Gabe. He looks bright and cheery as always, and I'm sure that he's still riding the high off of our last Loki show. So what's up, dude?
Yeah, man, big time. It's a pleasure to be here, Isaac. It's so awesome to meet you. I received my gift in the mail today. This was such an awesome surprise. This thing is powerful. Six-sided. Well, seven, if you count the bottom, right? Seven-sided. This is glorious, man. Thank you for sending this to me. This is going right on the altar. This will be just on the camera for the rest of the Slick Dissident career.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to hear the praise from you. I love geometry. I love it so much. And I love the hexagonal pyramid model specifically because, A, there's reports of there being hexagonal pyramids on the face of Mars, which I just think is a really cool little tidbit. But it's a great geometry. It encapsulates the whole entire body in the geometry of it. And it's really good for the energy and the environment.
And Gabe and I were just talking about in our last stream together, the mysterious, powerful, you know, potentially accursed six, not saying that six is actually accursed, but you know, there's the removal of the digamma was kind of the thread we're on, but I got to show off mine. This is a more traditional four-sided pyramid, green for the heart, totally feeling it. As soon as I opened up,
I got to correct you, Chance. I'm so sorry. It is an eight-sided pyramid. You look, there are indentations. It is a scale model replica of the Giza pyramid. So there are every single four sides, all of those sides, they condense into like they concave.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. It's not just, wow. It's kind of hard to show, but you can see it just if you look close. That's even cooler. Holy shit. I felt the vibe as soon as I opened up the package and I was like, oh yeah, this is good energy. And you sent me this one for Jenny. She can have when we're done with the stream, but it's got the flower of life pattern. Absolutely gorgeous. Definitely loving it. Thanks for the gifts, man. And he sent him Rush. So we got it in time for the show. That's amazing. Oh, appreciate
it. It was perfect timing. Yeah, I sent them out on Sunday, and by the grace of God, they came right in the nick of time, and everything was perfect. So it was meant to be, for sure.
So let's talk about you, man. So let's you saw I named the episode the Oregonite Trail. Oh, go ahead, Gabe.
I want to share with you, Isaac, I just learned a concept, and it happened completely in stride with receiving your gift, exactly on time for the day of the show that you're going to be here, demonstrating profound foresight and forethought and vision into the future and being rewarded for the effort, you know, for it to come, for the harvest to come right on time. And I just want to share this thought, this new light in my heavens is art that is syncopated to an event in history and time. And so you can do art for art's sake, and you can, you know, it can be therapeutic for you on your journey in your time and stride with your life where you are. But what you did by delivering two packages to two different locations and then arriving exactly in stride with the plan is your own magic giving you positive feedback. This is how you test your path. And you are getting awesome rewards, my man. I just really want to give you praise for making your art lock into an actual event. And this is, I think, like, we know about holidays and how holidays are magic. You don't have to be creative about it. They are magical. So yeah, the timing is everything, and you just nailed it.
Oh, for sure. Everything's already written in the stars, and it's just a matter of how it's going to happen. And like synchronicity, when you live a life of positivity and love, the universe comes and backs you up. God comes and backs you up. You are in line with your source, in line with flow. When you are in that state of flow, things just happen. I've had the most incredibly beautiful synchronicities and things that have taken place in my business and in my personal life on this journey because I am like putting my foot to the throttle, saying, hey, I'm going to do everything that I can to try and spread this information to people, try and spread this love, try and say, hey, this whole entire world that we live in is really just a game for us to learn how to love ourselves and others. My Instagram bio is, if life was a video game, our objective would be to learn to love ourselves and forgive ourselves and others. And I think that's just when you live in line with that, things just happen gratefully. And everybody else sees it and benefits as well. It's literally like a plague of positivity.
I love that, dude. I've been getting deep into Dune, the actual books, right? Well, reading the audiobooks for time's sake. And there's this like thousands of years, cycles of time, demiurge, golden age of Saturn period in the God Messiah or God Emperor of Dune book. But the whole thing is like the grand cycle of humanity forgetting and then learning again that the real power of, you know, the power over time or in the future is love, that being in the love flow state is the golden path. It's the golden thread that puts everything in the right place at the right time. So what you're saying, there's really not, you never really talk about it too much, that the positive energy, the appreciation for life, revoking the apologetic posture and entering the grateful posture. I guess just telling somebody a good strategy for communication. It, like maybe somebody is maybe you've put somebody off for a while or you haven't been able to get back to somebody. And instead of coming into it with like, I'm sorry, I made you wait for my response. And you instead say, thank you for your patience. It's always a better interaction, you know? So like to really reserve your apologies for when you truly willfully did something wrong and know you did it wrong and you have remorse, and otherwise default to being grateful for everybody else just understanding that you know, we're all doing the best we can here. But you guys see my title, the Oregonite Trail. Come on, that's good, right? I didn't misspell Oregonite. That's Oregonite, because Isaac's in Oregon.
It was perfect.
Okay, am I the first one to make that joke? Because it seems like prime dad joke.
Yeah, no, you are actually the first person to make the joke. No, I haven't even thought of it myself, and I learned about the Oregon Trail for years in school. So congratulations to you.
It was how old are you, though?
I am 20. I'm about to be 21 in April 1st.
Oh, man, youngster. Good. Yeah, okay.
I'm quite young.
Wow, it's mature for your age.
Yeah, I got married actually 2 days after I turned 18, and then we had an official legal wedding when that happened, and then in like 3 months later, on July 24th, we got married and had a wedding, and then the doctors say that we conceived our child that night, even though I don't know. Something happened. And wow. Then so we had a kid 9 months later. And so it's been an incredible journey. It's been beautiful and a lot of turmoil and a lot of trauma. Also dealt with my parents' divorce and right before I had my child. And I was the mitigator of my parents' divorce for that time because I started to work for the business that we built up that whole entire time that came crashing down after I started working for it. So it's been a crazy journey, but I've learned a lot in that time. I've learned about how to help people through their traumas. And I've also learned how to make pieces that are beautiful called Oregonite because we made a custom live edge tables and giant.
Oh, we hold that up. I'm gonna make it big.
This is actually, so this has got, this is for sale. If anybody wants it right now, $85.20. It is a throat chakra / third eye chakra pyramid. It's got some fluorite in it, and it is also got a bunch of other stones. There's a labradorite, I'm pretty sure, in here as well. It's beautiful, and it's got really powerful energy. And so I love making these beautiful pieces that resonate with, like, literally the sacred geometry of the Pyramid of Giza resonates with the whole entire body's geometric proportions exactly if you look at it on a metaphysical level. And then if you look at the Pyramid of Giza that was built in Egypt, if you were to superimpose the body and the chakra system over top of the Pyramid of Giza, the chambers inside of the Pyramid of Giza resonate exactly where the chakras would be. And those open chambers were actually resonance chambers that used to take place. There were giant tuning forks actually on the top of the King's chamber that would resonate with however they chose to make him go off. And it would create a giant vibratory construct that would create literally amplified electrical orgone energy that would transmit into the pyramid itself, but into the entire environment after that as well. So I try and take all of this ancient concepts and this geometry and try and impose it into modern technology that has been created, known as Oregonite now.
Man, I've heard a lot of things about what the pyramid was for, but I like that one best. It sounds most reasonable and plausible, especially with the way that later temples and cathedrals have much more obviously so a similar function. To me, it doesn't seem outside of the realm of possibility that there could be like a healing vibratory capacity to all that. And there's a few things that you talked about I want to back up on, but I have to say, now that I know you're 20, of course you didn't play the Oregon Trail. Gabe might have played it. He's older than me though.
I played it a couple times, but I had to do I did it on my computer on a website and crap, and it was not the normal Oregon Trail.
Well, I'm just glad that in your journey, you know, you're getting married and having a baby, and you're not no one's dying of dysentery, getting bit by snakes, all of that. But can we even? Oh, Gabe wants it. Okay,
sister,
we got it.
Your sister Susie is ecstatic from a plague of positivity.
So Isaac, you just gave us a good rundown. I mean, dang, you're so young. That's amazing. I love seeing part, like when I first started doing the podcast, especially like I wanted to give a voice to more younger people. And sometimes that is sometimes that works out. Sometimes it doesn't. A lot of times people in the early 20s, they get this, I know because I was one of them, they get this air of like, I already know everything. I know everything. I know more than you. But you've got so long between now and your Saturn return. I feel like you could really set, you're really setting yourself up to do well when you get to that point. That aside, can you tell us, you know, what point in the journey did you start getting interested in Orgonite and start making it? And like, how did that affect your life? And let's get into all that.
Yeah. I'd love to talk about that. If I'll back up a little bit, it'll make a lot of more sense to everybody how I got to this conclusion so early on in life. So I grew up in a very deeply religious family. We were holy, like Pentecostal Christians. We spoke in tongues. I saw a dude's tongue grow into his body through the name of Jesus in a prayer session with thousands of people or hundreds of people all praying over the guy. And I saw a bunch of different crazy healings take place early on in life. I learned how to basically astral project and how to see the look of people's rooms in their bedrooms when I was super young. Like I was like 10. I was like, I can look and see what your bedroom looks like just through praying in the name of Jesus and having these spiritual gifts.
And what was the denomination?
We didn't really have a specific type of denomination. We called ourselves non-denominational, kind of, but it was like, I don't know. Nobody exactly aligned with my spiritual beliefs. I went to a Christian school in growing up, and it was like, yeah, I believe all these things. And everyone's like, I'm a Baptist. I don't fucking understand a single thing you're talking about. But it was fun. It was crazy. But they were so in the know of all this stuff, but it was very gatekeeps. There's a lot of gatekeeping going on in the mainstream Christian community that makes a lot of separation between even the Christian community itself, but also in the whole community of Christianity versus other religions. Everybody just hates each other because everybody just thinks each other is a horrible person. And I absolutely hated the look of that. I thought, like, everybody, as long as you're trying to love people and be forgiving and trying to like lift others up, that's what Christ spoke about. And that's what we should really be focusing on, finding other people who are trying to do that. But everybody's just trying to say, hey, this is all, everybody else is stupid. Okay, onwards. There was a church meeting that I was at because my grandparents were the pastors. My parents were helped out with everything. Both of my grandparents were pastors of their own churches. So it was like crazy. But I was at this meeting and there's this lady named Becky Fisher who was talking about the Illuminati and the dark forces and all of this crazy stuff. I was like 12 years old and I was like, okay, this is a lot of information for me to take in. And so I actually listened to all of it. It was like a 2-hour long documentary about all this crazy stuff from a very, very deep religious standpoint about the 666 mark of the beast. This is the end times and all of this stuff. It's really a perverted version of the actual true apocalypse and awakening that's going to be happening. But besides the point, I was super in the rabbit hole.
Oh, don't rush, man. I like these details.
Okay.
Yeah, so, just okay. take it whatever pace. Floor is yours.
Cool. So I learned all this stuff when at like 11, 12 years old. I started looking into my own podcasts. I would work for my dad sanding tables for 8 hours a day. And I'm like, I need something to do. So I just started listening to conspiracy podcasts. The only couple, I listened to a show called Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. It's a really mainstream iHeart podcast. The guys are really nice on there. But they don't get really deep into the stuff. Like they don't get deep into the dirt like we do now. So I was very surface level mainstream thought, like looked at that stuff. And then COVID started hitting and I started looking into Alex Jones. I started watching him every day after I got married. I started working for my father-in-law, building and helping him weld and wire trailers and stuff like that every day. So I had podcasts in my ears every day and I was listening to the Alex Jones show every single day. 4 hours a day. And I was just absorbing all of the hate and the COVID nonsense. And I mean, he has a lot of truth that was behind it, but it comes from such a negative, fearful standpoint. He's poisoning his own people by telling him all this fear mongering. And so I didn't understand that. I had a hateful view of everything. I was not a good person at the time. I had a lot of stuff that I had to work through in myself. And I eventually was like, what happened was the war in Ukraine hit. And I was like, okay, I don't want to hear some dude talk about stupid war I don't care about that's not a part of me. And like, I didn't really want to hear about it. And so I stopped listening to him. And so I started listening to the likes of like Sam Tripoli. And he was very conspiracy oriented, but he said something along the lines of, you always need conspiracy in spirituality and they always connect. And I'm like, okay, how does my old mainstream Christian viewpoint connect to all this conspiracy stuff? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And then I got introduced to Ryan Bledsoe on the podcast, and he absolutely changed my life. And Chris Bledsoe, I listened to every episode of Bledsoe Said So. And the message that there are these beings of light, if for anybody who doesn't know, these orbs and beings of light that come down and talk to Chris Bledsoe and communicate with him. He has thousands of videos on his Instagram if anybody wants to see it. Absolutely incredible stuff. But some of the main messages they're communicating to him is that there's going to be a great awakening taking place. In the next 7 years, there's an energetic shift that's going to be happening. And there's a specific standpoint, astrological event, when the star Regulus aligns with the gaze of the Sphinx, we will enter a new knowledge. And some NASA dude put that in and said it was the Easter of 2027. And there's a bunch of incredible information and knowledge that I was learning. And one episode of Bledsoe Said So said, Ryan was like, there are these Secret Service spy program people that came to my house and was talking to me and was like, yeah, you ever heard about Orgone energy? And I was like, what is that? Like, and then you started talking about Orgonite and pyramids, and that was my introduction to all of that. And I was super interested in the ancient history. I had no idea how the two connected. So that got me into pyramid energy and free energy. And the fact is that if you were to build a cardboard pyramid, that itself, if you put like some food in it, you have a syntropic state of energy flow inside of the shape of the pyramid itself, just due to the geometry. And then if you take that geometry and if you apply it to technology, to mathematics, to energy, there's a quartz crystal inside of every single one of my Orgonite pieces. And this piece, this quartz crystal is shrunk and squished by the epoxy. And when that happens, you literally have an energetic electrical spark that happens. So it literally powers
piezoelectricity.
Yeah, the piezoelectricity. It activates the electrical potential and then the copper and then the everything happens and it just starts jiving pretty good. So yeah. Sorry, that was quite a rant.
No, thank you. Thank you for the rant. This is vibrant.
Yeah, buddy.
Okay.
The word piezoelectric makes me think of piezoelectric just makes me think of fish jumping, because there are sparks flying off, and then I just take it in my imagination to like flying fish going up a waterfall, yeah. And that it's kind of counterintuitive. It's like, what is this energy coming from? And it's going against the stream, even. It's going counterintuitive. So yeah, the piezoelectric just makes me think of fish jumping.
The wife says, the amplification of energy under a pyramid is a noodle I like to ponder regarding wizard hats and dunce caps. Yeah, yeah. Wouldn't that feel better? Like, what if instead of telling you you're wearing the dunce cap, the idiot cap, they told the kid, this is going to charge up your brain and help you feel centropic and harmonic, and you'll feel better than you did when you just got into that conflict or that outburst. That makes so much sense. Good comment.
Vibration and shape is so important. I actually went off on an Instagram comment about this exact same thing. So the thing is that the shape of any conical structure, sorry, a cone structure or any pyramid, it acts as an energetic funnel. So the thing is you have all the energy starting out at the bottom. Imagine a funnel face down. You have all of the water starting at the top, and then it comes down and the energy condenses at the bottom and there's more pressure. So on this upward facing pyramid, all the energy starts out at the bottom and it's funneling up in a spiraling form, and 80% of the energy is at the tip of the pyramid. So this pyramid right here, 80% of like the energy of frequency of this pyramid is at the top of this little tip right here. And so you have this conical structure and different shapes and different geometries are help with different things. I have this Nubian pyramid right here. This is also available if anybody wants it. But this is a Nubian pyramid that has a giant clear quartz at the top. And all of this energy is funneling up, and most of the energy is at the top here. And so anything around, if you have this specific type of any type of funneling shape, is positive for energy.
So I'm wondering what time between Chris Bledsoe, who's an interesting character, a lot of I like the things that he gets from his contacts. It doesn't have the same feeling as like the other abduction accounts and the sort of pseudo communism of the Space Brothers are messiahs, or the aliens are the Archons out to destroy us. You know what I mean? Like, most of the UFO alien crowd is in one of those two camps. And I love to get into the I love to get into the fringe things. Mysterious Universe is probably my favorite podcast ever. But with Bledsoe, from what I've heard, when I've heard him on other shows that I've listened to with him, he seems like his message comes from a more balanced place. But I'm wondering, between InfoWars and that, when did you get into the Interverse train? I'm curious.
So around the same time I was listening to Bledsoe Said So, I was listening to Interverse, and you had so many amazing people on and gave me a bunch of insights on how to, the exact thing that got me into this podcast, I always forget this, I don't know why. My daughter, she has something called hematomas, or there are these skin cells that come out on the outside of the skin, and it's open blood vessels. And she had a giant one on her back, and it ended up bursting, and it was a horrible mess. And it was like, we had to have like pads on it every day. She was in 10 out of 10 pain every day for 2 months. And my brother-in-law, he was kind of a conspiracy guy with me. And I never looked into alternative healing before. And I don't know why. It wasn't something that crossed my mind, but something he said to me, he was like, "You ever looked into alternative healing methods?" And I'm like, "I never have. I'll look through it, look it up." And I started looking at your podcast, and I looked through everything. I learned much more than just alternative healing. I've got an AquaCure right here next to me that from your podcast with George Wiseman, that's a great product, actually. Amazing stuff. But I was starting to learn about biofield tuning, and that totally changed my perspective on trauma. And my daughter was going through this pain with her back right now. And I was realizing, there have been so many traumatic experiences that happened to my daughter, through my wife, through me, through all the stuff that's happened in the last year. I have a bunch of issues within myself that I've never fully healed from. I started to bring connections from this to that and this to that, and like started to go through the chakra biofield map. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's connections to everything that's going on in the physical, to what's going on in the psyche and the emotional. You literally hold on to your traumas. I'm like, oh my goodness. And so I started started doing solfeggio frequencies every night. I started trying to like help raise my daughter's vibration, start raising her energetic capacity, start raising her all of that stuff. And I learned about Organite through Mitch, and Mitch started talking on your podcast, on a bunch of other podcasts. I started learning about how you can raise the energy. And so everything is like these energy blockages, which I realized these energy blockages is the same thing as the DOR, or negative energy, that Wilhelm Reich talks about. And so these energy blockages are literally manifesting in a body. There's a literal black hole inside of you that's constantly sucking out energy. And you can either literally move that through tuning forks and through intention, through a body from a practice person who's able to do it. You can also slowly take these energy blockages and be transmuting it constantly through Organite. And so what I do is I look at my products and I take a biofield tuning map and I say, hey, what's the stuff that's going on inside of you? What are the colors? What are the crystals I can put in this to try and target specific frequencies, target specific issues going on with you? I'm not a doctor. My products do not physically heal people. I can't say that. They will raise your internal frequency. They will raise your ability to be able to process things. They will return you back to a state of flow energetically. They will align your body. They will ground you. The literal Organite aura, there's an electromagnetic, well, people say it's scalar or whatever. There's a bunch of different things people say, but there's literally electricity flowing through it from the quartz. So there's definitely an electrical component. And if our bodies are electrical bodies, there has to be some sort of grounding that's taking place. There has to be some sort of programming. This programming is very important. When you install your home, you program your lights, you create constant grounds in your body. And when we used to live out in nature, when we used to have pyramid structures all around the world that we actually were connected to that weren't, when you have a pyramid and you don't take care of it, like the Giza pyramid, it turns from a positive energy battery into a negative energy battery. And that's why the pyramid of Giza and the whole entire Giza plateau is a giant desert right now, because it hasn't been taken care of. It hasn't been maintained. And so positive energy turns to negative energy if you don't maintain it. And so that's where you have to constantly have attention to your negative energy and everything. So, yeah.
Oh, it's balance, right? Like,
oh, totally.
That's the thing that, I don't know, the quick fix Band-Aid mindset doesn't always get is I want it to just be done and forgotten about. But the thing about balance is it's like the skateboard or the surfboard. You're always making the adjustment, always coming back to the middle. Oh, drifted off, coming back to the middle. And I got to shout out Marty Leeds. Thanks for the super chat, brother. You do so much to support me just with your, you know, generous lurking. I appreciate you, man. We got to see each other soon. Come on. Come on. And then, okay, so this comment, though, Isaac, check this out. Booty Yoga says, in 10th grade, he made a paper pyramid and put a razor blade under it for a few days, and it sharpened it. That is awesome.
I wouldn't doubt that. That's technically in the realm of possibility. I mean, you have degradation on the end of that razor blade, and if you were to place like an apple or something inside of a pyramid, it'll maintain its positive life force. And if you have that razor blade, it's degrading. And if you were to place it inside of a pyramid structure, there is literal positive life force energy that's flowing on the inside of it. I mean, anything can be benefited from that. And if the manifestation of that benefit for the razor blade is it increasing its sharpness, that's just what happens.
When's somebody going to make a pyramidical pantry or refrigerator? Come on. That's a $1 million gold mine idea.
Oh, totally.
Gabe, I'm calling on you, Gabe.
Right. So I wanted to share, you mentioned the funnel, the sacred value of the funnel, things that are conic. There's a couple really fun threads right here. Very funnily enough, there's a couple really valuable gems. I always love to point out, if you spell the word cone backwards, it's a sacred biblical name. Enoch. And there is a long, beautiful thread down the John D. rabbit trail around the harvesting of the language, the Enochian language, and that it is actually, its source code is a conic shape. I guess here, I'll just use this. A conic shape with different geometric segments extracted out of the conic shape, and that is the shapes that make up the language, and they're assorted conic articulations of cross sections, which is beautiful because some languages are said to have been harvested from a wise man who climbed up a mountain, and the mountain itself is a conic shape. And so Enoch going up and ascending and coming down with its sacred information, all these things about sometimes it's the cone of the mountain that is hiding the code. And then there was one more fun thing. Oh, funnily enough, it was a fennel stalk that Prometheus used to capture the fire from Hephaestus. And I love this little nugget. Also, that technology of using a fennel stalk to preserve fire, that is a torch, an artifact, a mythological artifact through other Greco mythology, is this fennel stalk used as a torch. But I just wanted to pass that forward to you, that even Prometheus used the fennel stalk to keep the fire burning so he could transport it. And some of my best walking sticks ever have had a really cool root stalk that has a fennel shape holding on to the sacred stone in the walking stick.
That's absolutely beautiful. I mean, one thing about the funnel is that it really relates closely to the toroid, and that funneling, spiraling motion moving upwards is something that's very, very important. And you mentioned Enoch, and something that always makes my brain connect, and there's a few things, is that the Enoch is also known as the Archangel Metatron in the ancient Hebrew Talmud. He is known as the Archangel Metatron. And when you have the shape of this Archangel Metatron, the physical shape of it is a Merkaba. And this Merkaba is also a toroidal vibratory construct. This Merkaba is also the shape of your body on an energetic level. People talk about this Merkaba being the chariot of God, but really what it is when you reach a certain level in your consciousness, when you, like, if you were to, let's say, ascend to a different level being light, let's say when Jesus were to ascend, he probably ascended as a Merkaba in a chariot of fire and whatever. But this is just a crazy tangent. But the shape of the toroid, the sacred geometry of that is so vital. Like, I have this thing. If you look at, you guys were talking about vortex mathematics in a couple episodes ago. You mentioned it, Gabe, you did. And I am super interested in vortex mathematics. I make these pieces called Roden coils. And this Roden coil is super powerful. If you connect this, these two wires, to a frequency generator, you can generate electricity and you can have incredible healing benefits. And so I place these Roden coils inside of my pyramids. And if you were to connect these wires to a frequency generator, you can have it slam out insane electrified orgone energies. But the actual, I wanted to talk to you guys. I've always wanted to talk to you guys about this. So the actual mathematics of this Roden coil are some of the most beautiful things in the world. So you guys are super into numerology and everything. So I want to bounce your guys' heads off this. So the vortex mathematics hypothesis is when you take like a coding system. Normally a code is in a binary system, but you say, hey, we don't have two systems, the duality system. We have a three system, a system of three. This three is very important. And when you have this in a wrapped wire way, it will, and when you take, I'm gonna back up real quick. I'm going off on a lot of things. Okay, so the vortex mathematics, if you look at the multiplication table, and if you take every number on the multiplication table and you take the numerological value of it, so let's say 9 times 9 equals 81. And so what is the value of 81? It's 9. And it goes, and so you take all of the numbers on the multiplication table and you get their numerological values of it. You have a code that you can utilize for a bunch of things. In this code that you can use, we can change the world with it if people actually understand it and utilize it. But you can use that code to turn it into this Roden coil. And this Roden coil is just a free energy system, this toroidal vortex. There's literally energy that is coming out of the inside of this right here and right now. And then it gets amplified when you put it on the frequency and stuff. But yeah.
I love what you're talking about, because like, it's my belief that even though you get taught in the mainstream physics and science that it's a entropic universe destined for a heat death where all energy dissipates into a soup of non-active, you know, squishiness. But there's obviously a syntropy or a harmony force. And what one of the cool things about it is the hallmark of that force when it's active is beauty. So that's part of like how our vibe sense works, is on the beauty side. But I want to back up to a couple things. There's a couple things, because like a lot of cool stuff was being said, but you know that a high number of mountains have a lake on top of the mountain. And in fact, I think that this was known to the ancients to be one of the like most sacred places, would be a mountain with a lake on top. One of the most spiritually powerful places. There's the, you know, the holy mountain is Mount Meru, but Meru or Amir is a lake, or a mare is a, or Mara, you know, like all these words, they can mean lake in some languages. So when they say Mount Meru, it's literally mountain lake is more or less what the etymology of that word is, or that phrase is. And in Greek, one of the words for mountain is, or like the peak of a mount, it can also have some other poetic meanings, like a stipulation or your terms, which I find interesting. But the word is oros. So that would be omicron rho omicron sigma, O-R-O-S. But that's phonetically pretty much the same word as the aura, oros, oros. It's like the word, the same phonetically, you're almost saying the exact same thing as the spirit or the divine wind or the breath, which I find fascinating. But the last thing I wanted to put out there, because I didn't know this until I was like, well, how do you, Metatron's in the Talmud. Well, how do they spell Metatron in the Talmud? It's Mem, Teth, Resh, Vav, Nun. And I'll just save you guys the time. That adds up to 314. That's pi. We got some pi, baby.
Hey, that is a connection right there. That is beautiful.
And there had to be something really relevant in that name, but there it is. It's pi. I hope Marty's still here to hear that. That's it's fun.
Well, let's talk about something then, okay? That's such a crazy connection to an even bigger connection. So the whole entire Giza Plateau energetically is based off of the pi analogy. You have the Giza pyramid, and then that's placed in the center. And then you have the Fibonacci spiral going out, and then you have different points, and everything energetically matches up to where the Fibonacci spiral would be. And you have the numbers of pi in the geometry of the Great Pyramid of Giza absolutely everywhere. And actually, there's an incredible discovery that Robert Edward Grant had made. He made a bunch of incredible discoveries with the Pyramid of Giza. One of them was he found an inscription of the Alpha Omega symbol inside of the sarcophagus of the King's Chamber. And it's literally engraved and sketched inside of there. And the scale dimensions is the dimensions of pi for the engraving itself.
Man, that's awesome. You know, I want to just kind of throw a random fact into the mix here. I had Kyle Denton from Typical New Herbs on my channel a couple of weeks back, and he just we were talking about Pythagoras being superstitious around beans, and he was has the presence of mind to call them by their, I think, Latin name, the Fabiaceae family. Is what beans are categorized as. And that has all the ingredients of the Fibonacci. The Fabaceae family has the Fibonacci hiding out in its name. And here's a guy being superstitious around, they think that the beans thing is a superstition around the transmigration of souls. And he is also a devout vegetarian. So there's this aspect of not transgressing, but I think there could, I always know that there's codes within codes with that guy. So yeah, I wonder about Fibonacci and the Fabianese, the bean superstition, what's behind the, between the lines there.
That's such a crazy weave. Yeah.
I got one more random thing. I have heard that the Metatron was once punished for revealing too much about the heavenly realms. And mythologically, that's, I don't know what chapter to send people to even check that claim, but that is really fascinating mentally, that the voice of God revealed too much one time and had to repent or
reset,
extract sort of retribution for.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of rampant crazy knowledge that was being spread. I grew up in the church, like I talked about, and I had a big step away from a lot of that stuff in Christianity. And recently, in the last couple of months, I decided to say, I want to read the Bible again from a completely new, fresh set of eyes, start from the very beginning. I want to get through it this year. I want to get through the whole entire Bible this year. And I was reading through Genesis, and there are so many things that are skewed in the mainstream ideology. And there's like a lot of shit. Like, you look at the I forget which chapter it is, so sorry, or in Genesis, but you have the verse that says the sons of God were on the earth at the time. But then you also have a second verse right afterwards that also says the Nephilim were also existing on the earth at this time as well. Never says that the two of those are the same thing. So what if the sons of God, let's say maybe the brothers, the other high level beings of light that are also existing, the other people made known as Thoth, Tehuti, other beings that have come down that have taught us things that a lot of the information is not available to the public anymore. I wonder why. There, you also were talking about the gold earlier with the golden information. There was a golden age previously that existed. This gold, it was an enlightened generation of people who were all focused on loving information and building people up. That totally connected for me. I'm like, the golden thread of information. But the golden period was a period of uplifting others and trying to spread information and enlightenment. And too much information could have been shared. People over generations start to lose their devoutness, start to lose their morality. People start to be selfish. And then you have this energies, these information, this technology that exists in our public or in the world in the wrong hands. And then God's like, oh shit, I fucked up. And then maybe sends down a flood to wipe out most of that. Maybe a lot of the whole entire population, maybe there was a lot of hybrid type beings. You have the Greek and you have every single different Egyptian mythology. All the mythologies talk about hybridization of beings, and you have half human, half other stuff. You have every single depiction of absolutely anything you can think of basically back then in those times in different religions. Maybe we just lived in Middle Earth back then and it was a whole different realm. And then we had to have a reset. Now we've been in the age of Pisces for the last long time and we've been having to learn a lot of lessons, but now we're starting to be able to absorb a lot of this knowledge again and start being able to uplift ourselves and others through this as well.
I've always found those ideas interesting. The astrotheology part of the Bible is what I can really grasp on. So I try not to, I've stopped kind of giving a lot of ponder to what's the history that's there, right? Especially because the astrotheology and all that is in itself a profound and helpful message, like the flood being the rainy season of the year, the winter part of the year and all that. But on that note, you know, what if it wasn't, because I just don't see the supreme being in the terms of like judgment and punishment. Even though that's the tone, of course, of Genesis and all that. But what if it was more like we reached such a level of knowledge that we started lacking surprises? You know, what if we attained the same state that you could theorize was the reason why God created vessels to put the divine spark in the first place? You know what I mean? Like, again, I'm thinking about Dune because there's the God Emperor of Dune. He's Janus. He knows the past, he knows the future, and the only thing that he wants is surprise. And if we put ourselves in that situation again, like if we built up our knowledge to the point where we started lacking surprise and we started lacking challenge and things like that, it would make sense that there would be some kind of cyclical reboot that would happen to put us down a few pegs so that we could feel that soul growing sense of struggle. Because if this place is a garden for growing souls, then you got to have the wind, you know, that you got to have the resistance. The tomato won't grow well if it never gets any wind on the stalk. And I think the same could be like, that's my personal preference. If we were going to consider the cataclysm possibilities of the ancient world is like, you know, what if it's not even judgment or punishment? What if it's just putting the pieces of the game back in the box and starting a new game instead? You know, like I prefer that type of metaphor. That's just me though.
I absolutely love that idea. It's like when you reach the last level, when you reach your highest level in Call of Duty, you got a prestige and you reset back down to zero. And it's like you have to do the whole entire challenge over again. You feel better because you already did it once and you feel better about it. But like once you reach a certain cap of like, I've learned everything I can learn, our whole entire incarnation in this plane is meant to learn. Whatever challenges we're supposed to grow from, every single person's different. You got a million bajillion different things you can choose to learn from and learn about in your personal journey and how you treat people, how you respect others, how you choose to be an asshole or not be an asshole, like maybe stand up for yourself because whatever it is. But whatever that lesson you got to learn is, if you're not in a challenging enough environment, you're not learning the lessons you got to learn. And the process of enlightenment and chakra work is a never-ending journey. You're always going to have stuff to work on. So if you're not in the environment where you're learning properly, you're going to be put in another environment where you have to learn about it. And so I love that theory that we learn everything we had to, we reached everything, we absorbed all the information that we could absorb, and we learned everything we could. We were sitting too good, and whatever happened, happened. And now we're here learning these lessons again. And probably learning even more lessons, obviously.
Well, you know, because a good indicator of that is how the Hebrew word for Noah, which is like it'd be Nun Chet, I think is how it's spelled. I could be wrong, but it's just those letters, right? And an alternate meaning of those letters as a word is comfortable. So it's like got too comfortable, got to send a flood, got to start everything over. You know, that's just my read, though. I'm calling on Gabe, though.
Yeah, buddy. All right. That tracks very well with the Hermit card. You know, the Hermit card is he has the boat. He has the Argo on his iconography. And that Hermit aspect is like, you know, going within and finding comfort within. I've been thinking about the posture of this Hermit. Is different than the Rider-Waite. This Hermit is kind of hunched down as though he's in a condensed location, where most other Hermits are like tall, bold, erect, and standing on a mountain overlooking a horizon. So this Hermit is different than the Rider-Waite. And I've just been thinking about his, he has understanding. He's not fully standing. He's understanding, and there's something to that playfulness, I think, but that is interesting, because that's also Noah by my read, Chance, that the Hermit is very powerfully Noah-esque. And you know, about the deluge, again, I think that this deluge, let's just say there was a grand flood that is correspondent to all the other cultures everywhere. And the effects of that causing people to have to migrate and go into toil all over again, I would say that the social engineers have replicated that many times over artistically. And theoretically, I stand in a space that the English language is a bit of a deluge of interpretive ambivalence, and something that is like it's a mental exercise I'm always up against is we have a language that's essentially a million words mass, but there are cultures out there who get the job done with only 80,000. They get the job done. And in a strange way, all of our artistic flourishing acceptance of anything willy-nilly makes us have to work a little harder to actually articulate concise causality is what I talk about. So having a wishy-washy language is a deluge. And I was just listening to some philosophers today. They were saying that languages that have a lot of rules, like real strict punctuation and only having very specific spelling for what they're intending to say, all of these grammatical rules, they make it harder to lie. And you gotta say that phrase twice. It doesn't mean what you think on the first pass. You're like, oh yeah, more grammar makes it harder to lie. But that's also saying it makes it harder to speak wrong. It makes the arrow go right into the target, and it's harder to miss the mark with languages with extra grammar. And so that's something that's fascinating to me, that there's a conservativeness to some people's language that gives them an accuracy that we can't even imagine, because we have this wishy-washy, anything goes kind of language that is fun. We have a lot of fun with it, but there are people who have an efficiency in their communication we don't benefit from. But then there's something else. Because I have the rebel spirit, and I'm like, what, more grammar, more laws? Psh, I scoff. I scoff at the idea because I'm all about the freedom. You know what I mean? But is that a privilege? You know, is my rebel spirit a privilege that is granted to me by having this deluge language that is very willy-nilly and silly and playful, kind of pirate speak, really? And then last thing before I'm done ranting, I also learned no official language. And they're still trying to make it official. But it's not. And so when we talk about authority and appeal to authority and going to the books to see what's what, we're kind of international waters.
Well, I missed the beginning of that. Start that over. You learned what? You roboted out, yeah.
Uh-oh. Am I lagging really bad?
Maybe, kind of. I don't know. Someday we'll fix it. I've done my best. Well, I'll move on. But this deluge question, I really recommend this book, The Celestial Code of Scripture by my buddy John McHugh. I wouldn't say that this tells you the ultimate origin of the deluge story, but it does give you an understanding of how scriptures are constructed. What is the magic formula that gives us the elements of scriptural stories and the miracle stories? And this demystifies a lot of it. I'll say that it's very much less hard to comprehend when you get the astral cipher and you see that the stars themselves are a text and a script. And it doesn't mean that fantastic things don't happen. I actually want to circle back around to something from the very beginning and talk about some fantastic and miraculous stuff from Isaac's memory banks. But I also think it's plenty healthy and helpful to reject things as possible, but don't buy into things as guaranteed because everybody else does. You know what I mean? So it's all maybe. I think that's the middle way is the maybe way. But Isaac, you talked about at the beginning your church healing miracle experiences and somebody growing a tongue back. And can you talk more about that? Like what you saw or like what the vibe was? I really want to know more about that now that we have more people here.
Yeah. So me opening my mouth. Okay. So what happened was I was probably 11 or 12. There was this really popular big time pastor that came into our church, and it was a late night prayer meeting, and there were a bunch of people there, and the vibes, it was like, if you're ever enter into a place, Chance, you do not every day, but very commonly, where you feel the vibe switch when you're in the tuning table in the room. It's like a healing energy that you feel. There's a almost kind of a heaviness to it, if that makes any sense. Like it's like there's a presence there, like something's happening. And so there was this guy who was
me. Yeah, I spend like an hour before I'm with a client, before we even are connected or talking, just cultivating that vibe.
Totally. To make it. It's like sometimes let's say you walk into like a massage room or something, and you feel something different in the room. It's almost like your whole body's able to relax because there's that feeling there. It was in these prayer meetings, I would say, is like an intense version of that energy. You say like energetically in the Bible, you say like when two or more are gathered, I am here. When the more quantity of energy of people's auras and people's bodies that are in there, it raises the energy of the room. You have all of those people's in their creative energies. They're in their inner light. Everybody's inner light is together all at once. And if you amplify that intention, if you were to direct that intention into one thing, God can heal people. People will be healed, and you experience that on the table with tunings, but you can experience that in so many different religions, so many different places. You can do that with your friend. You know how many times miracles have just taken place and it's just been crazy. People just in the doctor or whatever, crazy stuff happens to them. I mean, you hear the stories all the time, but I saw multiple events of stuff like this, like specifically the guy with his throat, like he was supposedly mute I didn't know him personally, but I wasn't even next to him. There were so many people there. I was up in the rafters, but everybody's freaking out because they literally said, they stated, I can't say this 100% happened because I didn't see it with my own two eyes, but my whole family saw it. They saw some guy's tongue literally grow into their mouth. It, like, their tongue wasn't fully there. Like, it was like he was mute. Something was wrong with his mouth, and something got fixed and healed it that day, that night. It was absolutely insane and incredible. And I saw multiple things like that take place, even just through, like, the power of my own thought and intention with a bunch of people. Like, stuff on even much micro scales happened 10 years ago, whatever, however long. I don't remember everything, but it's like that energy, that feeling. You don't have to be a Christian at a church to know what I'm talking about. Take that away. Even think about a time where you hear some bad news about somebody and you're sitting by yourself and you're like, oh shit. Like I know that my own intention, my own energy is important and it has a difference. Everybody here probably has been in that state where, like, they send the healing over. It's just something that you do, or even just thinking about somebody and putting that intention into the person is enough to be healing for them.
And so sometimes it's like just the permission. People need permission, like, to be allowed to. And that's why the real healer is just a facilitator.
Yeah.
They're not actually doing any giving anything or taking anything. You know, they just witness and facilitate. Topher is really good at that. Christopher Gardner with his polarity therapy. He has the ability just by, like, laying hands on somebody to know, to witness what it is the body wants to do, but that it can't do because it doesn't have the, literally the conscious awareness of what, of the person in the body doesn't have the conscious awareness of what that flow is trying to do. You know, think of the parts of your body that maybe never get looked at or touched or thought about. And there's, and it's kind of shocking in a way. And I believe that that unified intention can do some pretty amazing stuff. I tend to believe that we're in a giant mind and our bodies are in our personal minds. And that means that the limitations are pretty much bordered by our belief systems to a large degree. But again, I also like to reel it in a little bit and be is in the middle and balanced path as I can, that perhaps some of the rules that we've agreed to for how we play the game of life in this universe are there for our betterment, that not being able to just think of something and it appears right in front of you instantaneously is because we have a certain level of training wheels on our creative manifestation power, so that we can be really sure that our thoughts, feelings, and actions are aligned before we start manifesting. But there is, like, a quickening. There is definitely a quickening that occurs. And at a certain point, part of the lesson of being here is to realize I am going to get whatever I want, no matter what. So I better start, you know, making sure that it's what I really want. Because if you wish for things that aren't really aligned with your true self and those things start coming true, each one is like a barrier in between you and perceiving who you really are or what you actually want. You know, like the never ending story. It's not in the movie, I don't think, but in the book, Bastion, once he enters into Fantasia, he realizes that he can make anything happen that he wants. Like, he's basically God inside Fantasia. And he gets carried away with that to the point where each time that he's wishing for something fantastical or to make himself more powerful or, you know, have status over the other beings there, et cetera, he loses some chunk of his memory of who he is and where he came from. And that's like the whole arc of the never ending story is learning to wish wisely, because this is the place where your wishes come true eventually and sooner than you think. Like I realized that as a little kid, like that, there's something I wanted bad enough, somehow or another, it happened every time. And I have had confidence my whole life because of that, that I never needed to feel lack. I think that's been a big part of shaping what I do now and my worldview and self-view. But I really want people to walk away with that understanding that there is not really a limiter, you know, as long as it's within the bounds of like how life works in this construct and the order of operations of nature and all that, you're pretty much guaranteed to get what you want sooner than later. So, you know, be wise with that.
And on that note, when you ask for something, when you wish it, the amount of selfishness, the lack of selflessness that you put into your wish, the more it harms others and benefits yourself, the higher level of lesson you're going to learn in life, the higher amount of negative karma you're going to receive from that, whatever the return is, the more positivity you put into your wishes, the more what you wish for, what you manifest in this reality benefits others, the more you're going to benefit yourself. Cause that's just how the universe works. When you're generous and grateful towards others. And when you basically imagine you're on a ship and you're in the water and you have this arrow and you light it and you shoot it off into the air. That arrow is your intention. That's your wish. And if you were to take that arrow and you were to dip it in, let's say, positivity and love and gratefulness and gratitude, and you were to shoot it out, it's going to resonate at the frequency of all of those things you put at it. It's going to shoot higher into the air. When you, if let's say you dip that arrow in some fucking negativity and like, I want to do this because I feel like benefiting and like, I don't give a shit who this hurts and stuff like that. You're going to shoot that arrow out. It's going to slink down and you're going to get what you wanted, but it's going to come back to bite you in the ass because maybe you get something that you benefit for a day or something and you feel good about it. But whatever those consequences coming on the rear end of that, it's going to hurt. And that's just how the universe, how they all interacts. It's the every moment that we live in, whatever our frequency is, that's what we're going to get back. That's what we operate on is what we receive.
PK just threw out some really good questions that are where I want to go from here too. And so he asked, how did what Wilhelm Reich discover turn into quartz and metal resin pieces? He wants to know, is he missing something? Was there an electrical component, maybe like Rife technology plus organite pieces?
Yeah, totally. I'll go through the brief history real quick. So Reich passes away in the early 50s, and he has his orgone accumulators and his cloud busters. These are layers of organic and inorganic materials. So this is a layer of steel wool and then a layer of like actual wool or then fiberglass or wood. And it these constant layers, it's very similar to the layering system of the epoxy and the metals and the organite. But Wilhelm Reich was never alive to see an orgone organite piece. And then
let me even also add to that, Wilhelm Reich, the guy who coined the phrase orgone energy and made these accumulators and cloud busting devices and things like that, he died in prison. And his
day before he was supposed to be released, by the way.
Yeah, he died a super sketchy way. He was his products and creations were banned from interstate commerce. That's what got him in prison. Was that the federal government said, the stuff you make, it has to stay where you are. You can't send it to anybody for any reason. So, you know, scratch your head on that one. His work and stuff were confiscated or burned.
Yeah. So Wilhelm Reich, once the FDA got to him, he built these giant cloud busters and put a radioactive piece of uranium in it. He was at the Death Valley in Arizona, just very similarly to what Mitch is doing. But Reich had a televised appearance with these cloud busters. He had them out there for over a month, and he was able to make the Death Valley in Arizona rain for the first time in over 50 years. Televised appearance. He was actually battling what he called UFOs. The UFOs that he called would come into the atmosphere, drop the humidity again after he raised it with the cloud busters, and then disappear. And he was battling them constantly. And then he was able to make it rain. The FDA was like, okay, you cannot sell any of your stuff across state lines. You cannot ship anything, send anything across the border. Like you were talking about, one of his associates ended up doing it, not him. They took him to prison and they took him to court. And his thoughts were, I'm going to put the best scientific evidence. And he basically tried to do like a scientific analysis of the organite. He's like, I'm going to prove to these people that organite works, or orgone energy, sorry, his accumulators originally, going to prove they work, prove they're positive in helping people. And they threw him into prison saying he was in contempt of court. And then he died the day before he was supposed to be released, like you said.
About him, because, you know, think about how what we're saying about his life might seem like it contradicts with all this big rant I went on about you get what you want, you get what you wish for. Okay. His life story is one of fleeing from tyranny from country to country. So he received a type of conditioning in life that even he wasn't able to undo for himself, even though he had so much going for him in other ways. And a lot of his wishes and manifestations, like, you know, they did come true. He did amazing stuff, but he also seems to have had this core belief of the man being against him. You know,
well, do you want to know the childhood trauma that brought him to that conclusion? You are the, I'd love to talk.
I don't know. I don't know the childhood trauma.
Okay. It's the most incredibly horrible story. He grew up alone with his brother and his mom and his dad in his giant manor in, I think it was Austria he was in at the time. And he didn't go to school. They had a tutor come in and tutor him. And one day when he was like 10 or something, he came, found out his mom and the tutor were doing it. He walked in on them and she was having an affair with the tutor. He ends up going to the dad and says, "Hey, this happened." The dad goes to the mom, confronts her. She ends up killing herself out of the grief. And she feels, and then the dad feels horrible about it. He ends up killing himself as well. So Reich's decision to talk to his dad about the thing, which his dad was not a good person. I mean, there's always a reason someone cheats. I mean, it's not always a good reason, but there's always a reason. But his decision to do that absolutely destroyed his family system. And then he started working under Sigmund Freud with all of this emotional. He was developing a process called orgonomy, which almost perfectly matches biofield tuning, almost to the T. He goes in and he was studying under Freud, and he had people sitting down, and he realized when people started to talk about certain traumatic issues, they'd physically start to tense up and they'd start to have certain issues in the body. And he realized if he started to physically touch these people and help massage out what he called these armors, but it was really energetic blockages. It's the same thing. Energy blockages and armor is the same thing. But when he started working out this armor, people would physically have these releases and these energy, it felt like he exploded energy and people felt so much better. The same exact thing that happens when you tune somebody. It's absolutely insane. And so he got kicked out of the studying with Freud. He was sent to Germany. He started doing sex health started teaching people safe sex in the factories in Germany. And then they kicked him out because the factory workers started to want to have families. And he was sent. It was basically a reverse Project Paperclip after that. They sent him from Germany to work with the CIA. And then the CIA started working with his research. They ended up developing – he tried to sabotage his research because they realized they weren't going to do good stuff with it. But that was too late. They ended up making a thing called the Montauk Project based off of that. And if anybody knows what the Montauk Project is, it's what the show Stranger Things is based off of. And so they were literally taking these children, they were sodomizing them, and they were causing insane amounts of sexual trauma in their bodies and unlocking psychic potential inside of them. To all of the stuff that Reich was working off of and all of his research he was doing to try and help heal people, but they took that, perverted it, and started unlocking different things in the mind and started working with psychic programs and started all of the stuff that you hear in the conspiracy world
from Reich. In a simple nutshell, the healing process is about defragmenting the psyche, unifying the pieces of the psyche that have been separated. And my take of what you're describing in the inverse is the intentional creating of fragments that are themselves a blank slate that can be conditioned with different potentials that don't have the same limiters that a naturally derived psyche or psychic fragment would have. But by the way, I also throw on something that I found out, the book series or TV show Percy Jackson and the Olympians is about demigods in the modern age who are children who are trained at a camp called Camp Half-Blood in Montauk, New York. It's in Montauk. Greek mythology, children, Greek, Gabe, in Montauk. I mean, what's up with that?
That's insane. There's got to be some geometry or geometry or numerology behind Montauk. There's got to be a reason.
Well, probably, but it's also in the Hamptons where all the rich people live in that area. So, you know, who's most likely to offer up their children? But the Percy Jackson TV show is actually pretty fun.
It was amazing. I watched it in Montauk, though.
So there's that. Go figure. Yeah, Gabe wants in. Call it on Gabe.
All right. So, yes, a lot of psychic driving is rooted in New York for reasons even beyond what's obvious. Like, we know about, we were all initiated on that special day in that special location in New York. But there's also an aspect of even Harry Houdini, his death, in the Rider-Waite-Strength card. There's a mountain in the background of a Vestal Virgin soothing a lion. In my territories map, New York and Maine, Augusta is absolutely the lion. The shape of the map is the shape of the lion's nose on the tarot card, and in the background is Mount Royal, and Mount Royal is a place where they did tons of psychic driving. That's where Houdini got the sucker punch that killed him many days later. And he ends up going into the underworld in a kind of a hanged man Halloween ritual on October 31st, his kidneys ruptured, or his spleen ruptured from the punch, and he died on Halloween night. And that's very correspondent to the carving of the pumpkin and Judas Iscariot's guts spilling out between his legs in his death scene. It's all gross and gory, but it's very psychically supercharged. The consistency of Montauk and New York and the 9/11 and all of the trauma going on right there. And one thing that this is like a really long, there's so many receipts, it would be really hard to bring to bear, but I think that they want to draw the United States into the international courts. We're not committed like they want us to be. And if they can get us to commit into the international courts, it'll be pigs on the 7th. These are some things. And when you said Montauk and the psychic driving and the fracturing of people's psyche, that's very, very profound. That's very profound because some of those fractures, I think, lend to predictive behaviors. It's so monumental that humans are the first computers. Computers are just an imitation of us. And they figured us out a long time ago. The computers are actually just revelation of what we're capable of all along.
Man, that was amazing. You got a beautiful way of saying that. That all those connections, I mean, most things that at least the media pushes onto the public is some form of astrological or occult ritual intending to harvest the energy of the population. And 9/11, for example, I mean, we all know that there were bigger hands at play in that. And you're talking about Montauk in New York and how there's so much trauma that's associated with that specific area. You have something like, let's say this on a microcosmic scale, you have this Orgonite pyramid right here. It's a constant positive energy battery. With positivity, you don't need to recharge it like that because the positivity life force flow it's just the way life is. That's the way the universe is. We're always in a constant state of flow. You have to produce that negativity. You have to produce that negative energy. You can't have a negative energy. Well, actually, you can't have negative energy batteries. If you make Orgonite the wrong way, you can actually have negative energy batteries. Besides the point, you have to be constantly creating this giant vortex of negativity and hurt and trauma in this specific area. I don't know what their reason is for that, but I mean, if you talk about the earth as a giant grid system in different chakras and different points in the earth, the elites that understand all this stuff, they know where to put different things. They know where to make certain things happen in order to have the biggest impact on our psyche.
You know, I derailed you from an earlier question, so this has all been great, but what's the can you pick up the thread of Reich's Orgone accumulators to Orgonite in the modern form?
Okay, so Reich passes away, never seen Oregonite before. This guy named Carl Wells starts taking up the Oregon theory and starts to develop this piece called an Oregon. I think he called him just pucks and stuff like that. It was just epoxy and metal. There was no crystals to begin with. But then this guy named Don Croft, there's this guy named Don Croft and this lady named Daryl Croft. They were a married couple. They were pioneers of the Oregonite as we know it now. They were in the late 90s, started out, and then early 2000s. They passed away in the late, like 2018. Actually, we'll get to this later. But Don Croft invented what we now know as Oregonite. Everybody has their personal tweaks, does different things. I really like to target the frequency of color. It's very important. A lot of people don't care about the color of their pyramids, but I think it plays a huge role. I think that the color, what you perceive, is the energy that you receive. So if you perceive the energy of this blue Merkaba, it's a Merkaba resonating at the throat chakra. You have the specific vibratory complex of the shape of the Merkaba, which has very important energy, but then you have the color of the blue, which is very important. I'm pretty sure there's actually a piece of lapis in here as well. So this lapis is also going to target the frequency of the throat chakra. All of these, and you have all of these connections throughout different energy systems and structures. And you notice that one of the big thing that's very consistent is the color is very important. Color is always very important in all different sorts of energy systems. So that's the tangent on color. The Don Croft in the late 1990s invented Oregonite, and people have been running with it since then. One of the major problems is that most Oregonite, if you listen to this podcast and you look up on Amazon Oregonite, it's not going to be real. One of the big things about Oregonite is you have to have it packed full of metal. This metal is the antenna. It's little mini electrical antennas. So I have pieces
like at least half, right?
Oh, it's supposed to be 50% by volume, but I don't even necessarily trust that myself. I realize that the only shape, vibratory shape that matters in the piece is where the metal is. The metal is the only actual Oregonite. So anything that's actually just pure epoxy, it's not actually participating to the Oregonite. It's it's a negative energy battery because the epoxy itself is producing DOR. And so if you have giant layers of epoxy without any metal, it's creating negative energy that's not being transmuted into the positive energy with the metals. And because that, it basically is totally separating it. So if you were to look up anywhere, if it's not packed full to the brim of metal, it's probably not real Oregonite and it's probably not going to be helping you. There's actually a lot of Oregonite that's produced in like third world countries by child slaves and like child workers and stuff, which that has horrible energy transfer. Like I'm always in here with good vibes. I custom hand make every single one of my pieces. And I put a lot of intention and love into it. I'm like, I want to heal people. I can't heal people. The people only healing comes from yourself. Healing only comes from inside of you. You have to be open to this healing. Nothing will move if you don't do it. My Oregonite won't do shit if you don't actually open up to this healing. If you don't actually say, hey, I'm going to do I'm going to make the changes within myself to facilitate this healing. You can do this without Oregonite. Obviously, you don't need Oregonite to heal. People can heal just by millions of things, but most of it is putting the awareness to where your pain is and realizing why the pain is there. And then even emotional pain, everybody's running from something. There's always something that you are not confronting on any level. All three of us are. I mean, there's something that the three of us aren't confronting that we're going to have to learn and face in the next weeks or months. And it's going to be a lesson we're going to learn. We're going to grow from it on the other side.
Yeah, the truth, man. Yeah, like that's how even the great Wilhelm Reich, you know, met his end in prison with all this blockage, right? Even though he understood a lot about how this stuff worked. Like nobody is immune to this cycle. No matter how enlightened you become, there's going to be like this, just there's always a new level. But I'm still not clear, and maybe there isn't exactly an answer, but I'm still not clear how the density of metal and then like a quartz crystal or whatever other things you might be adding into it with the epoxy, how does that replicate or do something similar to the layered organic and inorganic material? Because that's how the Oregon accumulators worked with Reich, mm-hmm. was layered organic and inorganic material. So this doesn't really follow that type of structure, But is there something that you've come to understand about like why it does a similar effect?
So my epoxy I use theoretically is not organic, but it follows the same organic structure that you would have. Epoxy normally would be like a, let's say you have beeswax or you have like an amber, a piece of amber is a natural epoxy, but that the epoxy is the organic element. And then the metal that's existing in it is the inorganic element. And they layered this and they compressed it for the orgone pieces. But when you have the epoxy mixture and cure, it hardens it. And that same layering pressure is existent when you cure the epoxy. And then you also have the quartz crystal on the top of it. And they say that before you had the quartz crystals and the orgone pieces, they would take in all the orgone energy, take in all the negative DOR, but they wouldn't transmute it to the positive orgone energy. So once you started adding the quartz crystal in there, it electrifies it. So I think if you look at it from like a, an electrical standpoint, when you have the compression of the quartz, it's going to amplify it because there's going to be electricity interacting with all of this copper and the steel that's inside of it. But
I wanted to say too, like thinking about this, you mentioned the epoxy similar to like amber or something. I wonder if the holy sailors, the, you know, the Pelagi, Etruscan, Phoenicians had some understanding of this, because theoretically they might've been the ones also building pyramids or predecessors to them. And on top of that, the Etruscans in particular, they had crazy amber artifacts and they had crazy metal filigree capabilities, goldsmithing and stuff that some of their techniques have not even been replicated yet with modern tools. And I think that, you know, maybe there's artifacts out there to be found. I would have to like spend some time searching, but where they're like using amber and the metal together in one piece. I bet that they were doing it.
Oh, definitely. That's an orgone generator right there.
Totally. Chance, I just recently got wind that there's a myth in the Mormon mythos. There's some mythology of nautical culture that would put the beehive on the front of the boat. And we happen to know that shungonite is powerfully beneficial for these beehives. And also there's an aspect of nautical navigation that the kind of like using the boat as a compass of sorts. So putting a beehive in the front and something about interacting with the bees would tell them that they're on the right course. Now, this could also be that they were putting the beehive constellation of Cancer at the front of the boat so they could get around. But I just love your idea of orgone being beneficial for navigation. I think I've heard things like that from the distant past. And then I wanted to maybe enhance the potential of these generators by suggesting the idea of, have you ever heard of training for an event as an athlete and using the golden ratio in your training regimen so that you are at a pinnacle, you're at peak performance when the event happens? But the beauty of it is that you've actually trained your body to anticipate the event by syncopating your practice sessions to a golden ratio time frame. And my suggestion is that if you're using this orgone device, you can use the golden ratio in time to charge the device so that you land on a key event. And I'm finding that this, again, my idea from the beginning I just learned about is using art that is syncopated to an event in time. And this, I think, is kind of the master's touch. This is a mastery of Saturn. This is the finishing touch on art is whatever you make of it. Well, it's something else when you do it in concordance to time. It becomes something else. So I just wanted to kind of throw that into the mix of the potential of these things. That I know that the layers generally have a rational proportion of high value sacred geometry, but I think we could do the same thing in time, in fun ways, to each their own.
Well, and even if it's not, which obviously I think that the energy of like the golden ratio, let's say theoretically you do 3 reps, 1 rep, 4 reps, 3 reps, 1 rep, 4 reps, or whatever you do. I mean, incorporating the pie into your training regimen, even if the action, the ritual of that itself isn't benefiting you, the mental, the framework you're going to be setting in your mind is going to be important and beneficial to you. So if anything, it's training your subconscious. And if you are resonating in your subconscious with these positive values, this golden ratio, I mean, the potential, I mean, maybe you're going to be raising and unlocking certain states of consciousness doing that. I mean, I don't know.
So the thing I was just showing is, it's on eBay, so I don't know the actual antiquity of it, but this is an example. It's like amber and metal filament in a ring. And it does look like Etruscan. I don't know if it's actually real. It's claiming to be. But that's such an interesting idea. Like, that this is not new, it's a rediscovery. Makes a lot of sense.
Oh, one of the big things you mentioned with the Etruscans and the Phoenicians, when I mentioned the Alpha and Omega in the sarcophagus of the King's Chamber, I was listening to the podcast that Robert Grant did about it. He mentioned it. It looked like it was Phoenician writing instead of any Egyptian or anything that matched with that. And so it got me thinking, like, this Phoenician culture, race, whatever it was, it's probably much more worldwide, and there's a lot of things that have been hidden that are also involved. It's probably all a big yes and, everything's included, but we're just putting dividing lines, and we're separating everything because we don't want to have a full view of the picture.
Wait, so there's like engravings or writing in the King's Chamber?
Yeah. So in the King's Chamber, on the sarcophagus in the King's Chamber, there is Robert Grant was the first person to find this. There's an Alpha Omega inscribed inside of the King's Chamber. And it was basically impossible for it to be placed there. I can shoot you an exact link. I saw it. It was on a video on Spotify, but there's actual like evidence. You can probably find a picture of it, but Robert said that it looks like it's Phoenician writing, not actually Egyptian. Like it looks more like it's like Phoenician Etruscan.
Oh, okay. And are you talking about in the King's Chamber or on the original doorway?
On the sarcophagus, like literally. So this, the top of the sarcophagus, it's a rectangle. On one of the lines in the rectangle on the top, there is Alpha Omega probably inscribed like a quarter inch into the granite and of the sarcophagus itself.
That is cool. Interesting. Now I wanted to also ask one thing while we're in a pause. Oh, Gabe. Yeah. Calling on you. You got it. Oh, he's okay. He's good. I wanted to ask, so other than, you know, child slavery, labor, and the wrong proportions of metals, what's the wrong way to make organite?
So it's kind of hard to say, because if a lot of it is your intention, a lot of it is the energy you put into it. No matter what you create, anything you create is affected by the energy and the intention you put into it. However, if you do not have the proper ratio of metals, and if you don't, you have to have a crystal that's at least 1 inch long, that's going to be able to be large enough to get enough of the electrical squeeze, basically. So it's basically getting enough juice to power the device. And then after you have that at least 1 inch piece, every single piece of the organite, if it is not having the mixture of the metal and the epoxy in the spot, so like 90%, 95% of this pyramid is organite. The bottom 5-10%, it's technically not organite because it's just pure epoxy. And this pure epoxy, if you're using the metals to attract the energies, because metal is always going to attract energy no matter what. There's a lot of things that we make in general that are like negative energy batteries that we just don't even realize are negative energy batteries. But if you have this epoxy and you have a tiny bit of metal pulling it in, you're pulling in the negative energy. if you don't have a real crystal in it, if you don't have a crystal at all in it, you're not properly transmuting it. You're pulling in this negative energy and it's getting trapped inside of the piece itself. And so if you don't have enough of the metal, it's also not proper. So I keep harping on the metal amount. It really is super important. I look at a lot of people who make organite pieces and they have clear epoxy tips. And if it's just clear quartz, you can see a little crystal, but it's mostly clear epoxy. None of that tip of the 80% of the power of the whole pyramid, that 80% of the power is not actually being used because there's no organite in the top of it. So every single piece of my organite, you have all full packs from the very top of the tip to very far as I can get to the base of it, because I want every single filament, every single square inch of this organite that I can make. I don't want to be producing anything harmful. I don't believe I could at this point with all the knowledge I have and all of the intention I put into it. But if anybody's going into this, if anybody wants to make your own organite, it's not very hard and it's not very expensive. I implore you to. I actually want to create a course on how to build proper organite, and I want to create a Teach a Man to Fish package where you can have enough stuff to, like, maybe I'll throw a mold in and some epoxy and a little bit of something for you, ship that to you. I'll teach you how to build your own organite. It's not very hard, but one of the main things I would say is try and make sure there's as much metal as possible. If you don't make organite properly, if you don't put enough metal in it, if you're making pyramids, one thing about epoxy is if it gets too hot, it'll crack. Epoxy will break and crack, and a lot of bad stuff can happen when it gets too hot. If you have enough metal in your organite, the metal will absorb the heat. And so you can make almost as big of a piece as you want, not worry about it cracking. If you make it kind of properly, it won't crack at all as big as you make it, because the more metal is in there, it's going to be taking that heat in. It's going to be just the whole system's going to be going well. But if you don't make it properly, people have to commonly put layers, and you'll see organite with like 5 or 6 different layers. The intensity of the squeeze of the piezoelectricity is being dampened because you have tiny little layer after layer. But when I make it, it's one gigantic piece. And so everything's coming together at once. Everything's getting condensed and squeezed down there and hardened to its state all at once. And so the energy is flowing through the whole entire piece while that's happening.
I really am glad to share that particular message that it's the epoxy. Like, a lot of organite makers don't account for the fact that the epoxy is not really in itself like a good thing. But when it's used properly, it's almost like a, because DOR, it is like, or yin in a sense, is a suction of a sort. So when it does have this like bottom part, the bottom out, having that component without the metal in it, you could almost look at it like it's imitating a toroidal thing, like energies from the environment coming in at the bottom and then shooting back out at the top, like an air purifier. What about another question? What if like the integrity of the piece is damaged, so the geometry isn't as perfect? Do you think that that is a super big deal, or is it depend on like where or how big of a damage?
I mean, it depends on your meaning of super big deal. The thing is like, I've got a piece, it's right here. So this, there's some exposed metal right here. You can kind of see it. And then there was a bunch of blue that I had to put over top of it because all of this was so packed and tight that the epoxy couldn't make it all the way to the top. So I did a little bit of an epoxy job, did a few layers of it on here. And then this exposed steel, it's fine. I mean, if you're a perfectionist and you're like, I want the absolute perfect geometry, if it's not perfect, it will damper the efficiency of it because the vibration isn't absolutely pure. It's not perfect to what it's supposed to be. Is it still going to be beneficial? Yes. It's still going to be amazing. It's still organite. And you can have organite any shape. This is the first puck that I ever made, actually. This right here. It's maybe a little more epoxy on the bottom than I would like, but it's really, really heavy. And it doesn't have to be a pyramid. If I were to have a hole in the side, I've got a few pieces I've sent to people with bubbles, because sometimes that's just what happens. And I think it adds some personality to the piece. If you've got an issue with it, it's not going to affect the positivity that you're getting, it's still going to transmute the DOR to positive energy. It's maybe not, if you're really focused on the geometries of the pyramid itself, like this, the Giza pyramid, it's got 8 sides exactly. The geometry is perfectly scaled to the pyramid of Giza on every single note. If you care about it like I do, yeah, I want my pyramid to be right, but it's not going to hurt it.
I have like a sixth sense, you could call it, with energy fields. I've talked about it before. It's part of how I do tuning stuff. So I get feedback in my body whenever I'm looking for an energetic boundary of a field. I can find that boundary consistently. The feedback is repeatable for me. So, I mean, it's a one man science, but it's scientific. And this piece right here, it has, it's maybe hard for me to show, but it has a field size that's about this wide. So I'm sure that's where like the boundary of its sort of own bubble is at, but I'm sure that can still have like a dissipating effect out into the environment. And this piece is smaller, and I got probably more about this big of a field reading off of it when I was doing that earlier. I'm wondering, like, how big is too big? You know, like, we haven't even talked about your like tables and stuff. Can you talk about other shapes or functionality of organite, like bigger size? The very first thing we talked about was you making these tables. So, you know, I'm looking at the time, we've been on for a while. I want to make sure we get that stuff in too, and then show off your website. I can actually just pull up your website and scroll through it a little bit while you talk about this.
Yeah, totally.
That's okay.
So I had I started my business back here probably May, just about a year ago now. And I had a total of 3 sales from the months of May to December of 2023. And then I was on a couple of my first podcasts, and it kind of took off. I actually lost my job literally a week and a half before it took off. It paid for everything I needed to. I've just been skirting by. God's been providing, but just enough. But it's been absolutely incredible. After that happened, I've been trying to expand my pyramids and my geometries. I think that geometry is so beautiful. I really love, like, this right here. That's a pentagonal teardrop dodecahedron pyramid, and it's got really nice geometry. And there's multiple different sections here on the pyramids right below. It'll show off there's my Giza pyramids, and then I have hexagonal pyramids. I have tetrahedrons. I have Merkabas. I have these hexagonal charging plates. I'll actually pull one up for you guys to see right now. This one also is available if anybody wants to buy it. This is a blue and pink mixture charging plate right here. On the other side, here's the copper and you can see the quartz right there. And then there's the steel. And then I'll show you guys one more time. I've been trying to work with multicolor tone pieces and stuff like that recently. But yeah, all of my, thank you so much. Every single one of my pieces I make sure has the intention of my geometry inside of it. So it's like every single piece I make, I'm like, okay, I understand how beneficial this is. And like the Pyramid of Giza, it's like absolutely beautiful geometry in every single piece. Like the 8 sides, the fact is that when you have 4 sides, like a box, energy does not flow well in the box. I know I'm not the first person on this podcast to say that, because like Topher with his pieces and the stuff that he's like, all the people you've had building new energetic structures, you like to build domes and conical structures. You like to build things that have positive energy. So every single one of my pieces has positive energy flow. You won't see a single square. I don't think you'll see a single square on my website, but all of this stuff, it's like really reasonably priced. I don't make much of a profit on it. It's the epoxy is the most expensive part, but copper is really expensive too. I have like that right there. You see there's gold flakes and silver flakes that are add-ons for that. So gold's a superconductor of electricity. So I've got gold flakes. I got silver. I haven't even mentioned this yet. I put Ormus monoatomic gold inside of every single one of my pieces. So it's basically liquid monoatomic gold that turns the epoxy into a superconductor electrically. So you can also, it's right here, actually.
I recommend raising your prices, Ormus, man.
I totally should. I really should.
I recommend it. I know it's like the any creative and any artist, especially early on, their first instinct is like, should just make it as cheap as I can. You know, I don't want I don't want to make people pay too much or, you know, that kindness. But there's especially in things that have a capacity to bring coherence or be part of somebody's healing toolkit or an experience to help somebody rebalance themselves. And with art too, you really, you actually can weaken the power of the thing itself or the experience itself by undervaluing it because it has an effect of undervaluing it in the receiver's mind, you know, that, and the fact that if the, there's a, I'm not saying you're dishonest, but there's a dishonesty in the exchange when you ask for less than what you need or what would be best for you. So just keep that in mind that, you know, when you're pricing your stuff, consider it as a factor, like not just the time and materials to make it, but also what about my life and my lifestyle that I do that keeps me in the state of coherence to allow me to do this, even when I'm not actually doing it. And how can I factor that into the price as well, that they're not just paying for the time and materials, but they're paying for the knowledge and expertise that I spent time to gain. They're paying for the energy of coherence that I cultivate around my entire life. You know, I have, you have a wife and a child, you know, you're supporting them. Just some, that's just my friendly two cents. Like you could charge more. This stuff is worth more, especially compared to like what's out there, and the right people will still show up. So there's also like that trust in God factor as well. Like that, you're not going to go hungry if you ask for too much, and you can always adjust later if it's just not working out. But I would consider kicking it up a notch because it's good work. It's not just art, but it's functional. And you're like, we all feel your vibe, dude. We all get it. Like you're, omnibenevolent, as Rachel said in the chat.
I like to be kind, and I it's also been quite the struggle the last little bit. Like sales were great for about a month and then they slowed down, and it's like I was let go of my job, and then I had this business just fall into my lap with customers, and I was like, okay, this is amazing. And then I was like sitting with $20 in my bank account consistently, and it's like, okay, I don't know what to do. I need people to purchase these things that I'm able to make and it's going to benefit people. So I'm like, I try to get the word out there, and all of the, everybody out in podcast land, you Chance, you're so kind to have me on. I really appreciate it. And like, I do need to give myself more value. I need to say, hey, I'm giving all of this information even on these podcasts. And I'm telling these people all of the background to all this stuff that I'm talking about. And you know how much you guys know how many hours that takes personally in a day-to-day life. And then I have the creation of the piece and I have everything else. And so it really true. I do need to value myself more. And it's like, yeah, that's a piece I made for Chris. It's got one of those rodent coils in the center of it. And it's a river of epoxy. If anybody's interested, I mean, I'm not going to raise the price of that, but if anybody's in the chat right now, sees it, I mean, I guess go buy some right now before I raise the prices after the podcast. But thank you. Thank you for those kind words.
You can always give our audience like a coupon code too, though.
Oh, totally. Okay, let's do that right now. What is the code you would like? I'll give everybody 10% off.
I always just go with Interverse.
We'll do code Interverse as soon as this podcast is over for everybody listening. I'll do 10% off and then give 10% back to Chance as well. So,
oh man, thank you. I'll start putting you in my affiliates, man. I really like this stuff. This is really cool. I had fun back when I was friends with Mitch and having him on and talking about Organite, but I'll be honest, I like your vibe better. And I think we're more aligned, and like, I'd rather that you were my Organite guy. So I'm stoked for this connection.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
These tables are insane. I've never seen anything like it. We need to acknowledge that. These tables are amazing.
Okay, let me tell you what I'm planning to build for you, Chance.
Yeah, man. How about instead of giving me affiliate kickback, once I help you get enough sales, then like that funds the table. Just do that.
That'd be totally. Super cool. Awesome. Yeah, we'll do that. I also want at least one tuning from you, so we'll have to discount that into the price.
Awesome.
I've really been wanting a tuning, like really bad. Okay, so, but the thing is I want to build you a tuning table specifically with, it's going to probably be a little bit smaller, but I want to do a river of Organite in the center, but then I want to put Giza pyramids aligned to true north, exactly like they are all across the world, right? I want to put a red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet on top of the table itself. And this will serve as the chakra centers if anybody else is a tuner, if you want to get me in touch with Eileen, maybe, I don't know, but I'd love to start creating these Organite devices that are for biofield tuners themselves, because this specific pyramidal structure for the chakras with the whole entire river being the whole entire body, I think it's really good energetic potential to help increase.
It's a genius idea, and they're getting, I'll just say it's a genius idea. I'll leave it at that. It's a really good idea. Eileen would be into it. I'll at the right time, we'll bring that up to her as well, because it's super smart. Like, I mean, I know that it's not absolutely necessary, but I like the going the extra mile for the aesthetics and the intention. I use candles, I use crystals and all that. So a table that had all that inlaid into it in a beautiful way, plus there's orgone, get out of here. That's the way to go. Gabe has been quiet for a long time. Everyone's freaked out. I'm calling on Gabe.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, man. I love that the price is 963. Don't think that slips past my radar. That's choice. Perfect.
I try to make every one of my prices solfeggio tones.
Yes, that's magical. It's so magical. And it's the optimal amount out of those three numbers. Like, this is, you know, the highest value arrangement of the numbers. That's very, and to add on to what Chance was saying about raising your prices, I recently started to research magnanimity in its classical sense. And one of the essence of it's the redeeming factor of the giver, the number two personality type. Is magnanimity is the best word choice to describe and bring out the accomplishment of the potential of that personality. In magnanimity, one of the things that I think a lot of people, our culture has just kind of left in the past, is that you are deserving of respect, and you have to not just give it, but you also have to deserve it yourself. It's kind of that thing about if you give away all your apples, then you've impoverished yourself. So there's a certain aspect of maintaining what your value is as a source. And then another thing I wanted to share is we keep mentioning the Giza Plateau. And this is just the strangest discovery for me is... Plato is in the nine position in Plato's Symposium. He has dominion over, Plato in the nine position. He is rounding out the story. He's in a very, because he was the late arrival, he wasn't at the symposium, but he's a generation after. So he's slothful. He's late to the party, but he gives it its shape. He gives form to the party. This puts him in communion with the muse of geometry. And his name is Plato, but his muse is holding an orb. And I just love this fact because we hang out with flat earthers and it's all, is it round? Is it flat? Is it round? Is it flat? And somehow Plato and his muse are laughing at us still. His name is Plato. His muse is the goddess of geometry and shapes. And on a sacred plateau, the Giza Plateau is where sacred shapes come to life. And so any plateau is a place where you can access, you know, these sacred stars, these sacred forms, these forms of the heavens. But I always, you know, I speak in both context when I say heavens. I'm thinking of this dome, and I'm thinking of Orania's dome as well. So I just wanted to share that with you, that you and I have a common affiliation for Orania, the muse of Plato, who gives shape to...
That's great. I really want to run this by you guys. I've been getting a lot of people thinking and a little bit of shit from people in the podcast community about my theory on the shape of the Earth. I don't think it's a globe. I don't think it's flat. I think it's a donut. Everybody always laughs when they hear that. But I think that our Earth is a macrocosmic, microcosmic representation of a toroidal structure. If you have the actual shape of that toroidal structure, it is a donut. And imagine this, okay? You have the outer wall of our donut being the firmament. The inner wall of the donut is the ice wall, and we are stuck in this realm. The lower level is the you could say the third density realm. Whatever realm is underneath us, whatever realm is above us is going to be sandwiched in. And we're in between these two realms, and we have access to both the lower and the higher realm through our earthly bodies and through our heavenly bodies. And what's your thoughts?
I can dig it. I don't know what it is. Just know it's not a globe in the dimensions described. And that in terms of celestial navigation, the plane that we're on would have to be flat. But a donut shape could have the ground part of it could still have that flatness that allows for navigation via a sextant. Other than that, I don't know enough to make a different assertion, but the fractality of your idea makes sense to me. I won't make fun of you for it, buddy. I'm good with that.
So you mentioned the donut. I have to bring it up. This is card number 9. This is in the position with Plato, and also signifying Pluto, the slothful one. But it's also Yoda. And Yoda has the famous line, or do not, there is no try. Well, do not is a sacred shape, sacred geometry for sure. And in the solfeggio aspect of do, re, fa, sol, la, ti, do, number 9 is the do. But it's the do twice, actually, because you start there and you end there again. So it's kind of a do not. It's a do not that ties into itself.
Well, it's like the constant repeating cycle of the 9. You start out at the 1, and then you climb up your way. And when you get to the 9, you reset back down to the 1. It is the toroidal, constant, infinite cycle of life. And that's what the 9 represents, it sounds like.
It also makes me think of Halo, you know, the ring world from the Halo game series. That's fun. So here we are. We're reaching about the 2-hour point. I think I'm ready to move us towards the wrap up, but I'll give both of these gentlemen a chance to give closing thoughts. We'll start with Gabe. Okay. Gabe is good. Isaac. Oh, no, Gabe's good. Okay. You're going to say something? All right. Delay.
I'm good. I'm ready. Yep. So I really wanted to name my channel Halo originally, and I couldn't bring myself to do it because Halo, when you die, they do the teabag on you when you die, and I just couldn't get the teabag out of my consciousness. I was like, if it was like 10 or 20 years from now and people have forgotten about the teabag, then maybe I would go with it. So yeah, Halo is like such a great word, but it's strangely tainted. Get it? Okay. So I wanted to share a weave that was floating earlier in the conversation in the King's Chamber about the Alpha and the Omega, which is on the scales of this adjustment card. It's very faint. There's an Alpha here and an Omega over here. There it is, Alpha and Omega. And what I, and of course we know that this is, you know, one of the cornerstones, the bedrocks of the alphabet. But what I've discovered, guys, this is creepy. So these things, they land closer to home than you would ever imagine. And so often they're right under our nose. And I find that that's like the elders really love to hide things under our nose. Because when I had my dental surgery, I now can see the shape of my my jaws, and they're two completely different shapes. It is so strange. The bottom jaw, the bottom mandible, is in the shape of the alpha, and the top is a beautiful shape of the omega. It's even articulated. It even has little curls on the ends of the omega, like little fancy serifs in my teeth, in my mouth. So I have an omega on the top and I have an alpha. We all do. And an alpha on the bottom. And that's what's been feeding us all along. And what really makes this magical is that it adheres to the plane. It's on the plane. It's on the two-dimensional realm. This is where the alpha omega imprints on the plane of two dimensions. Same thing with our feet. And so there's something next level magical about the plane, the 90-degree plane, being the dimension of death, or the dimension of two-dimensional information being conveyed. But that just blows my mind that I found the alpha and the omega within my own king's chamber. And it is laying flat like the rite. The ultimate rite of passage is when you go in to be dead and your feet are no longer, whatever, they're no longer this way. Your feet are now laying this way. And you've, that's the ultimate right angle, is now you're prone. You're supine, you're laying out. So yeah, I just thought I would share that I found the ultimate alpha omega in my damn mouth. Ain't that something?
We can't hear you, Isaac.
Go ahead and raise that card one more time that you showed. Go that card that you were showing, put it back up. Okay, what do you guys see in this? There is an alpha and omega, but what is the alpha omega inscribed into? That looks a bit like a pyramid to me. Is that not a pyramid? It looks like a pyramid. It looks like the alpha omega is inscribed into the pyramid. Well, you see the geometry of of the scales. It looks like a pyramid.
I love that. I love that. You know, there was in my extended family history, there was a sacred farm in Niowot, Colorado, very sacred location, very tumultuous history of the land there. And I had a lot of profound experiences there. But one of the artifacts was a pyramid in the backyard, maybe more shaped like Chance's. I think it has more of Chance's shaped pyramid that was made out of copper borders, but glass in between. And it was a greenhouse in an empty field on this property. But the cool thing was, they had dug out an inverted pyramid that corresponded with the same shape going into the earth. So the horizon of the earth was the 50-yard line, and there was an exact pyramid going down that was also reflected by the glass structure going up. And so that's really cool that you picked that out, because that's kind of what I'm seeing in terms of hitting close to home and some sacred stomping grounds of my family. That's really neat. I love that.
Yeah, and you can totally see that pyramid facing downwards as well as upwards in the card. You have a lot of theories or rumors that there is also a pyramidal structure underneath the Great Pyramid that is mirroring its top, just like you had on the in the glass there. That the greenhouse that you had that you were talking about, that would be a very strong, beneficial energetic structure. If you place plants inside of that thing, they would skyrocket and grow very well.
I like the idea of there being a mirrored structure underneath.
As above, so below.
All the structures are built on other structures. I think humanity goes all the way down and there's no bottom. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's a beginning or end. Speaking of the toroid shape of the earth, even if that was just an allegory for time being a circle and a cycle or a Mobius strip, that makes more sense to me. So, Isaac, you got anything you want to leave the people with, man?
Well, love is the most important thing in the universe. Always forgive others. And if this whole entire Organite business is all a joke and I'm being misled, at least I'm getting the message out to love others and to forgive. And that's really the most important thing. Forgive yourself for all the shit that you've done. I've got a lot of stuff that I have a hard time forgiving myself for. And I think that the more time we spend with introspection, more time we spend realizing how we learn from these mistakes, how we learn from these things that we benefit from in the end, because we come out on the other side of it a better person. Realize that there's no shame in experiencing these mistakes. There's no shame in having these things happen to you. And the more you can embrace it and you can be like, hey, I did this. And eventually you'll stop identifying with the trauma itself when you start learning how to be positive about it and start loving yourself for it and start loving others for the things they've done to you. I really think that that's the most important thing. My website is www.oregon-ite.com. My Instagram that has most of my photos and stuff, you can find a lot of my stuff there, is oregon.ite. And then, yeah, you can find, if you liked what I had to say, shoot me a message through my website or Instagram. Let me know to keep going. Or if you have anything specific you'd like, if you have any, let's say you've done a tuning with Chance before and you have a specific chakra issue you still want to continue to actively have in your mind to work on, a pyramid is the best way to think about that. Let's say you have a running traumatic issue with your, my left knee is actually really messed up. It's been messed up since I was in high school. And I know there's a lot of metaphysical things, a lot of emotional things that are affecting that. I can't wait to figure out what all that is during our tuning. But if you've been through a system like that, if you've been through something like that, an Organite pyramid is a great way to constantly be transmuting that negative energy into positive energy, but also giving you that mental, that subconscious thing like, hey, this is my memory, a reminder for me. It's out in my living room. It's going to remind me every single time I see it. Oh yeah, this is the stuff I talked about with Chance. Or hey, this is the stuff I learned about in my meditation. This is the stuff that I remembered. All those stuff, usually it's fleeting. Usually it's something that you absorb into your subconscious and then it kind of disappears and you go about with your life. Those are things that you really need to be focusing on more than anything. Those things you need to, I love that pyramid that I just made. I've been working with two-tone colors and I love doing the blues and the purples and I've got some really cool stuff coming out. If you have any favorite color combo or scheme, anybody who's listening, I gifted it to a piece to a guy, a grower actually, who's, he did a, that plant, I did a 40-day day-by-day pictures. You can look at it on the Instagram. It absolutely skyrocketed in growth. It was absolutely insane. If you were to place – I actually am partnered with Food Forest Abundance. I know you guys have had Jim on the show a couple times. There's this guy named Graham Towerton that works with them. I'll shout out Graham. He's absolutely incredible. But if you go the ones before, it had a bit of a slump. Day 42 looks a lot better than 43. That's the hydroponic system. It had a bit of a sad ending, but it was looking a lot better before those days. there you go. That's in its full glory before it had a bit of a downfall, but it absolutely blew up after it got the Organite. It was insane. Cool. It's been a crazy journey. Thank you everybody who's been listening. If you've gotten through this far through the episode, which I assume everybody who's been watching it stuck around, I appreciate you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for absorbing all of this. It's been a pleasure.
PK says, 20 years old, there is hope.
Nope.
And Diligence Works Music says, legend, life has a lot of good in store for you, bro.
Thank you so much. I unfortunately, I can't say there's a lot more like me, man, in my age. It's been an unfortunate poisoning of our minds that has been taking place for a long time. But this generation's gotten hit with it really bad. You've got people who, I mean, every single generation at this point, Howl has the potential to be in this slump. I mean, people like Slick, people your age, people my age, people who are 10, people who are 70. Everybody has the potential to not have their potential right now. Everybody's got a lot of things sucking away their energy, sucking away their time. But my age specifically, we don't have the drive that we used to. We look at this everyday news media. We look at all the shit going on with the world. We think, oh, even if I'm somewhat awake, there's no way I can make a change in something. I'm just going to keep going about my life and living shitty and not helping anything. I mean, that's the way I thought for a while. And now I've been on every podcast I can trying to spread the word. I'm like, I just want to show people that if you take the initiative, if you say, hey, everybody who's out here listening to this right now, if you haven't done anything with your life in terms of like, sorry, that's kind of rude, but if you haven't done anything in terms of like helping others or starting figuring out what's my journey, what's my thing, what's my organite, what's your thing? Everybody's got it in them and everybody's got the potential to change the world. If you start taking the initiative saying, hey, I'm going to put energy into this. I'm going to trust the universe, trust God, trust that this is positive. If you put positivity into it, you're going to get positivity back and you're going to give it to others as well.
Yeah, man.
You're
Isaac. I want to lather you with some phrase. Can I bathe him with some praise, Chance?
Please do.
If you want.
I just want to say a lot of people would come. Yeah, man. A lot of people would meet you and say, oh, you give me hope. And I want to make it even better. I want to say, you prove my faith. You prove my faith. I knew you were coming. I knew you were coming all along. I never questioned it at all. I knew you were coming, buddy. It's great to see the next generation and the generation in between, all these generations, buddy, all this generational healing. That is the 5G. That's the 5G. When I was young, I gave a speech on the SS Yorktown about world peace. And I told people that one of the keys to world peace in the future was respect between generations. And when they started calling these people X and these people Y and these people the boomers and the bangers, and it turned to like, who can get a passive aggressive joke on their elders before they pass away? That's all fun. That's all fun. But buddy, I knew you were coming. I knew you were coming. And I love what you said about, as long as I'm spreading love, then I know I'm on the right track. You know, you'll get people coming along and they'll start putting shade on the elders and saying like, Gurdjieff, you're studying Gurdjieff? Gurdjieff, and this is the cult of personality. That's something I want to give to you, is just be ready for them to come at you with that cult of personality stuff. Gurdjieff was a master. He knew that the cult of personality was going to be a problem, and that's why you can't put a finger on him. He knew the wizard's gambit, and he knew it well. So I just passed that torch forward, my man. You're on a beautiful path. Don't let anybody discourage you.
Man, I'm going to say this is the first podcast I ever shed a tear on. That was very kind. That I don't deserve that.
Yes, you do, man.
Thank you so much. I'm not the only one of my age listening to this right now. Okay, I'm not the only one who has the potential to make a change in this community, in this world. The people who are listening to this podcast, I wanted to say this since the second I listened to this and heard all of the amazing people that were just fans of the show. Everybody in this chat, you are the prime 1% of the whole entire world. You understand things from a connected standpoint. You have the responsibility, due to the information you have learned, to spread this like a wildfire. You have so many emotional, personal responsibilities. You have so much you've learned learned about yourself. You have so much potential to pour into others. You know what I did for the next year after I started listening to the Interverse podcast? I started calling out my old religious family about the emotional blockages inside of themselves that were making themselves die, even though they were pastors. But you know what? It goes how it goes. What you should be doing is start slowly chipping away at the people inside of your life, the people that matter to you more than anybody else, and start going, hey, you know them. You know their tics. You know their blockages before they even have to tell you.
You chip away at them by showing them what it looks like to crush, showing them what coherence looks like. You know, that's the chipping away, in my opinion.
Totally. And then you lead by example. You were talking about people like who, if anybody was going to throw me like shade or whatever you said, people in the future, whatever they have, people are feeble minded. People don't understand reality right now. I have faith that a lot of people are going to change. However, anybody that comes at you, not just me, if anybody who's listening, if people come at you in any way, if you show them hate, you are enforcing that feeling that they gave you. You are confirming it. You're saying, yes, I deserve to give that guy hate because he gave me shit back.
Well, you got to also find the place in yourself, like we talked about with Reich, that creates the belief and the expectation that you're going to hit a wall when you want to help. Totally. And then also just don't discount the power of witness. It's not about, it's not about imposing your will is not the path to healing, right? So witnessing where the blockage is, like you just said, that's super powerful. Witness and allowance are what can open up that, like help cause that blockage to open up and flow. And what you said to virtual group huddle right now, what you said about the people listening that are in this audience, especially the ones that show up live and they chat with each other here, that 1%, they're the 1% of the 1% coherence on getting it. I'm not just my own horn. Like I know what we've got here. This is special stuff. Like this vibe, this isn't what the 20,000 consecutive viewer live chats feel like. And I'm always going to be about quality over quantity. I don't mind having more quantity show up. I would love the more sharing, but yo, you guys, the responsibility you really have is to know that your inner world is your outer world. And like Isaac, you brought up the knee problem. I would love to look into that with you. It's about something that you find challenge letting go of, and the tools available to us with things like biofield tuning or even other like divination type stuff, we could zero in and help you see exactly what the specific conditioning is for you about what kind of thing it is that's hard to let go of. It's always going to still be a choice. This is the deep in class, Jenny says. Yeah.
I can't wait to bring awareness to it. It's something that I've been pondering ever since I learned about this topic. And it's like, I think a lot of healers try so hard to heal others because they feel like there's a lack of potential for healing within themselves. I think that's something that you see with Reich a lot. Like he was a hardcore smoker. He like a lot of people in the healing industry, they die of things that they shouldn't have died of, especially if they were to practice what they preach. Like there are so many people that are so fired up about helping others heal because you're like, I couldn't heal myself, but other people can. So like, I'll keep pushing other people to heal. But like, if your temple isn't clean, you're going to be giving off shitty energy. Like it's really important to make sure that you yourself, like me, like I've been really I work every single day and I haven't done the best job as I should have in terms of like my self work and my working through all my emotions and everything that's been going on with me. Cause I've been like, pedal to the metal, trying to build as many organized pieces as I can for everybody else. And it's like, I love giving the energy to everybody, and everybody can take this in from my standpoint or from anybody else's. It's like, you take in so, you give so much energy out, try and heal so many people. There's always an infinite well of energy inside of you, and that might be just an excuse so you don't have to work on it yourself. And so one of the biggest things is like, everything that people are coming to you about, the universe God is probably bringing that to you for the specific reason for you to learn what they're going through so you can heal the similar way yourself. Because oftentimes if you're not listening to the lessons of the universe is going to get louder every single time. And until you confront that, and until you say, hey, I'm finally listening, tell me what you're trying to tell me so I can learn. Then you have the call, you're in the eye of the storm. And then once you harness the eye of the storm, it all dissipates, basically.
Beautifully said. Yep. That's exactly how it works in tuning. What comes up for me with other, like, I feel like I have a master's, I've had a master's training in psychology from doing tunings, but it requires honesty to either dive into my own personal experience and growth I've already done to be able to help them see the stage of growth they're at. And everyone's going at different paces. It's not a linear thing. So where one of us has grown here, but someone else didn't grow here, but they did grow here and the first person didn't grow there yet. Right. But it's either that or I'm noticing in the immediate presence of them what I needed to hear myself. And it always works that way. I want to say thanks to some super chats. Machine says, your name is like machine. I never even thought about that. It's not spelled that way, but you are the machine. Maybe he says, maybe the 5G eliminate the weak and turn the rest of us into X-Men.
You can turn negative, harmful 5G energies into positive life force energy with Organite. Fun fact, the way that you turn into an X-Men with 5G is by hooking yourself up with an Organite transmuter. This little bad boy is all the transmuter is the little puck of Organite on the end. This is the same thing you got for your wife. It's also got the flower of life symbol on it. I sell 3M adhesive attachments you can either put directly on your phone, or if you want me to make a pop socket out of it, I can as well. But those also not super expensive. Should probably raise my prices a little bit. But that's a super nice way to protect yourself. And your phone is something that's always next to you. So it's really nice to have. That's a staple piece.
Yeah. Dissonance is entrained by coherence. So like what you're talking about, it's a principle of nature. So like, even if it's not everything, it's better than nothing and does something good. I'm sure about that. I mean, I can the same exact method I used to do biofield tunings. I can feel the vibe off of these pieces. I can feel the boundaries of it and all that. Agatha gave us a nice super chat. Thank you so much. Rachel, second super chat of the night. Unbelievable. She's just always throwing money at me. I love you so much. Gabe can be super chatted at Slick Dissident on Cash App, $ Slick Dissident. As far as tunings go, I think maybe mid-April is about where we're at for scheduling. So if that's something you want to do sooner than later, you want to get in touch with me, chance@interversepodcast.com, because it runs about 4 weeks out, 5 weeks out with where you're actually going to land on my schedule versus where when you book with me. So just know that there is a line, but you'll get there at the moment you're meant to get there. It always works that way. Sure. Other things I want to announce before we go, really excited. And maybe I don't feel like doing it right now. Maybe next time I'll play the sample. I'll put it in the Telegram as well, the 5 minute sample, but there is a new audiobook that I have narrated that is now available. It is Spirit World Book 6, Terminalia. That link might be too big for the, okay, ignore that. It's too big of a link for the YouTube chat. I'll use the tiny URL. But Terminalia is the sixth book in the series, and it's all about what happened when the Spaniards encountered the Native Americans in the Mexico region. It's also got several chapters about all of the admitted forgery of the history of Christianity from the church fathers. It is an awesome book. I think it's his best of the Spirit World series. I really enjoyed narrating it. You're going to learn some good stuff from it. Check it out with the link I just put in the chat or the description of this episode, wherever it's posted. You'll be able to, if you've never used Audible before, actually get it for free by signing up for an Audible trial. Highly recommend that. And you're supporting me and Dylan. Another thing, speaking of Dylan, we have a new show. It's called Inner World. You know, like Interverse and Spirit World put together. Inner World episode 2 will be coming out in a day or two. We've already recorded it. The whole episode is about the Pelagi, the Holy Sailors, and just what there is to know about these givers of letters and languages. Super good episode. If you like the first one of Inner World, the second one is on a whole nother level because we really know what we're doing at that point. The first one, we were sort of just having a members only conversation and realized partway through, hey, we need to do this regularly. We have a lot to discuss. So that show, Inner World, is just for people that support me directly or support Dylan directly. So that's going to be Patreon. It is going to be on Rockfin, but only in a pay-per-view capacity. None of the, not the shared membership thing that Rockfin does for the other premium content that I put on there. Or you can become a member on YouTube. So anyone that's super chatted tonight, if next time you feel like super chatting, if you just want to put that money towards joining the YouTube membership, all of the extended content that I create is now going to go on there. And, you know, you get a fun little symbol. I'll upgrade the symbols at some point, make them more Interverse specific. And most importantly, you get the Inner World podcast when we put it out. Or you can get it by being on Dylan's Substack. If you subscribe to him on Substack, you'll get that show there. One way or the other, is it worth your time? I know you're going to like it. Chance at interversepodcast.com for tunings. interversepodcast.com/sound-healing for more information about that. You know, give Isaac some time. He's going to put up a coupon code for the listeners to get some Oregonite. And this has been, you know, I knew we'd have a fun conversation tonight, but I just want to say, brother, thank you so much. The vibe that you shared was exactly in line with what I like to cultivate here. It was better than, it must be the Oregonite. Everyone's feeling it though. I think this is exactly the type of thing I want to bring to the show. So, you know, someday in the future, if you wanted to come on and talk about something you've been researching or hang out or call in to a show that's in progress, just let me know. You know, you're a good kid. We need more of you out there like you. So we're all just amazed that you're 20. I had no idea.
Well, I deeply appreciate it. I want to give my most heartfelt thank you to the two of you guys. I mean, if you guys liked who I am, thank Chance and Slick. I mean, they had such a huge impact on me growing up, or not growing up, but in the last few years. I mean, you guys have been so impactful to so many people, and you guys are the hosts, so you don't hear it enough. This is coming from a huge fan of the show, and you guys are changing so many people's lives by coming here every week and talking about these things. You are doing the work that you're meant to be doing, and you're changing lives more than you could any other way. And you guys mentioned, the Interverse coupon code, that'll be out next day, or not next day, right after I'm done with this live. As soon as I'm off of this, I'll get it hooked up. So you guys got to wait 20 minutes, 10 minutes, and that'll be out. But yeah, cool. You guys, I feel like I truly met some of my soul family today. You guys are absolutely amazing. Thank you.
All right. Takes one to know one. Okay. Good night, everybody. We love you. Thanks for tuning in. What a good show. See you for the next time. And watch out for Inner World episode 2.
Big respect, y'all.